Disruption Zone. Opportunity lives where the status quo dies. Talking to the greatest innovators, disruptors, and off-the-wall inventors we can scrounge up. You laugh, you'll learn, you'll be inspired. Now, here are your hosts, Leland Conway and Cameron Mills.
All right, joining us on the Disruption Zone today is Kentucky's Agriculture Commissioner, Ryan Quarles. Gosh, there's a lot to talk about. People worried about the food supply and supply chain. The FDA has been hassling distillers who in Kentucky have been switching over to making hand sanitizer. First of all, it's good to have you back on the program, sir. How are you?
I'm doing great. You know, like countless other Americans, I've got to get around to do things around my house that have been neglected for years. Been cleaning, been working on the farm, been chopping wood like I'm a force to be reckoned with. It's I think that when this all settles, there's going to be a subgroup of Americans who, A, don't have a job to go back to that was like it was before, or B, right. They say, you know what, I enjoyed spending a little bit more time with my family. I'm going to find something else to do.
Yeah, no question. My Cameron Mills, my co-host, who's with us most of the time, and I were talking about lessons learned during all this, and I said, you know, I'm an extrovert. I'm a guy with a short attention span. I like being out and with people. I said, I've actually learned that, I believe it or not, I actually kind of like being by myself. I like being alone. I like taking a little time to slow down. So that part's been definitely good for me. I know for me, I've caught up on all the Netflix I ever wanted to watch. And I know I know you've seen The Tiger King, right?
Yes. I mean, who hasn't at this point? My gosh. I mean, if there's ever a time to release a documentary that highlights bizarre criminal activity, now is the time to do it. Holy smokes.
I think there could be
Can't go back.
We cannot put that tiger back in its cage. I think there should be a national game of like which character in that documentary doesn't deserve to go to jail.
My gosh. And there's more to the story. People are already talking about a sequel.
Oh my gosh.
A Hollywood premiere. Like who would play Joe Exotic? That's the question. Which actor is able to perfect it? I'm not sure.
I don't know who could. Sure. Vince Vaughn? No. I don't know. I'm trying to think who would be a great Joe Exotic. Maybe
I don't know. Maybe the guy who played Joe Dirt. That would be a good one.
Yeah, there you go. That'd be awesome. It's so funny because like everybody in the country probably thinks Carol Baskins fed her late husband to a tiger. And you know, I got to ask you this question since you saw the documentary. So a friend of mine and I were actually talking about this, and it's like, I'm convinced she killed him. And my friend is like, well, probably, but I'm not 100% sure. Because remember that her ex-husband said, right before he disappeared, he said, told to one of his friends, he said, if I can pull this off, it'll be the greatest thing I've ever pulled off, which is kind of insinuating maybe he wants to try to fake and disappear. So I responded to that, and I was like, wait a minute, but why wouldn't you take your money? Because Carol got his money. And then we both at the same time went, wait a minute, there's a big missing thing. And if they do a sequel to the Tiger King, they have to bring this up. They never said whether or not one of his planes left the hangars at that airport where they parked the van. You know what I'm talking about? Because one of his planes is gone, then he probably did it himself. But if one of his planes is not gone, but his van just mysteriously, weirdly shows up at the airport, he got fed to a tiger, man. I mean, did you think about that?
No, but this tells me two things, Leland. One, you have entirely too much time on your hands. And number two, as Carol Baskin said, use sardine oil if you're going to feed someone to a tiger.
Yes. That was my favorite part of the whole thing because I looked at my wife and I'm like, does she realize or did the producers of this documentary realize, wait a minute, this if she knows how to do it, I'm just saying. Oh my God, it was so funny. I love people's reactions to it too because it's one or the other. People are like, that was the most entertaining 7 hours of television I've watched, or people are like, I can never get that 7 hours back. You know what I mean?
Can't get it back. But you know what I've had to do? I've had to detox from it and start, you know, reading books that I haven't had a chance to read for a while, or bone up on some info or statistics. You know, got to put some positive information back into my head after watching that.
I think detox is the exact right word. after watching that. Well, let's get into what you do and how it applies to everything. I mean, obviously, Kentucky is fighting against the coronavirus. You know, there's ways that we can politically quibble about whether or not governments have made the right decisions. I thought it was interesting. The National Review had a story yesterday about how Sweden has not done the lockdown thing and that they seem to be turning the corner and may have found perhaps the best solution to this. But time will still remain to tell us whether or not that's the case. One of the areas that a lot of people are super concerned about is the food supply chain. And you being the agriculture commissioner are in a great position to tell us how are Kentucky farmers doing, how will they get around this, and what are your big concerns in a case like this?
Sure. Look, agriculture is very concerned about COVID, just like all other industries, but we're a little bit unique. At the end of the day, everybody needs to eat, and we are going to rise to the challenge to feed folks. And the very first message I want to convey is this. The food supply system in the United States is very, very strong. We're part of the safest, most abundant food supply system in the world. When other countries have their food imported, with the exception of some seafood, exception of some vegetables, etc., we are a net exporter. We have plenty of food in the United States, and despite the run on our grocery stores, and this is kind of what really woke people up. For the very first time in people's lives, they went to the grocery store and may have saw aisles that were not stocked for the very first time in their lives.
Yeah.
And when you see that visually, it wakes you up a little bit. And if anything, there's a little bit more appreciation for agriculture now than there were just, you know, 6 or 7 weeks ago. But let me tell you about the grocery stores. They are doing a heroic job of stocking the shelves and keeping things sanitized.
Yeah.
You know, I was shopping as recently as last night. Everything's back to normal for the most part.
Except toilet paper.
What happened is, except, yeah, now that one, I'm still racking my head around that. And for me, I actually needed toilet paper. I was one of the people that actually ran out.
Yeah.
So I don't know if this is like a black market item. I don't know. you know, it used to be cigarettes and booze that you need to hold on to, right? But
we thought we won the lottery when my wife was. I actually saw this coming, believe it or not. I was about 2 weeks ahead of the curve when I was looking at the news, and I was like, there was a story that popped up on my radar that said that in other countries they're having toilet paper shortages as a result of COVID-19. And I was like, I better go grab some. And it just happened to be on sale that day. So I bought 4 or 5 packs. And took it home, and that was at the time nobody was even looking at it. The next day, that shelf was empty, and it's been empty ever since. But my wife got a box of 80 rolls of like Scott paper that normally gets sent to businesses off Amazon, and we thought we won the frickin' lottery.
Yeah, you are a very rich man.
Yeah, I'm going to set up a TP stand. Going to sell $20 a roll.
Insider trading there. You know, you predicted the market.
Yes.
I mean, well, look, I can't speak on toilet paper, but I can say this. Americans just changed their buying habits overnight. And mm-hmm. and look, we've become a nation that's become more reliant on eating out at restaurants, meals that are cooked for us or pre-made. And a lot of people are learning how to cook again. So it's actually been kind of cool that our farmers markets are open. People are learning how to cook again. We've had so many awesome opportunities to try to take advantage of local agriculture. And look, if you're a farmer raising, say, a freezer beef, you know, you're raising the cattle on your farm, you raise them out till maturity and you sell the meat directly off your farm, you may have had one of the best months of your life.
Right.
Because they're sold out. They're right. sold out. And right. so I the real question is this a fad, or will this continue after COVID, or as we learn to live with COVID? We don't know, but we're making sure people know the food system is strong, but COVID-19 has exposed some supply chain weaknesses, not just in not in food, but in other areas like our medical supplies,
yes.
vitamins. Here, let me ask you a question. If you have eaten enriched flour, meaning vitamin added flour, mm-hmm. anytime, those vitamins came from China. We don't really make them here,
okay.
and you got to stop and think about it. It's like, how dependent should we be
right.
on other countries when it comes to critical infrastructure? And look, I'm all about trade, and we've made a lot of progress in the last couple of years just to try to put some parity and put some rules on both sides that we follow. But there are some areas that people may want to say, you know what, maybe we should be a little bit more open towards domestic production. And that when it comes to personal protection equipment, medical equipment, pharmaceutical drugs, et cetera, I think this has started a conversation in America that, hey, you know, maybe we should be buying more American made.
This is interesting. I read an article last night. There's the largest maker of face masks in America is located in Texas. And back in the swine flu outbreak during the Obama administration, they had essentially answered the call and went to a 24-hour shift, three different shifts running 24 hours a day. They produced enormous numbers of these face masks. And as soon as that pandemic was over, their demand went through the floor. He had to let people go. It cost him tons of money in unemployment. And he said, you know what, I'm not doing that again. And he's now getting criticized for not running 24 hours. But he said, I can't do that to my employees. I have to protect what I have. So he's making as many as he can. He's running 80-hour weeks. He's producing more than a million of these masks a day. But he's also turning down 300 million mask orders from some countries because he's afraid that as a business, it almost took him out last time when he was asked to do something. He did it. And then as soon as it was over, hospitals went back to buying from China, because the difference is, because of labor costs in America, he charges 10 cents is what it costs to buy a face mask from him. But China's making them for two. How do we avoid that when this is over? Because right now, that's why we buy our vitamins. It's why we buy most of our medicines are made there. We do it because if you try to do the labor in America, we demand a higher pay versus over there, we can get it for so cheap. So how do we balance that out? I think you're absolutely right. We can't depend on them, but in a way they have the world in a stranglehold because they can do it so cheap.
Yeah. And look, don't get me wrong. I'm all about trade and free trade and making sure that we have rules that can be enforced for fairness and we protect our intellectual property, et cetera, et cetera. But at the end of the day, though, there are certain industries that as a nation, you're going to have a discussion about, do we need to incentivize the ability to, say, make more PPE here or ventilators or other critical medical decisions? You know, this is already done with military purchases that we more or less want to have a lot of our equipment made here or made by our allies. I mean, the F-22 obviously was just components from I don't even know how many countries that put together that fighter jet, but it's one of those things that we just have to have a discussion about. But when it comes to food, this could end up being an opportunity for us, because I hope that we're able to get this pandemic under control. But there's other issues out there. There's plagues of locusts in Africa right now, eating up, literally devouring crops in the field. And I think that the American farmer is going to have to export more and help feed vulnerable populations around the world. And we're going to do it.
Yeah.
We're going to rise to that challenge.
So let's talk about the American farmer. You are an American farmer. In addition to being the agriculture commissioner for the state of Kentucky, you have a farm. You have a working farm. What are your biggest concerns? Do you think you'll be able to hire the labor you need this fall to bring your crops in? Will there be any kind of snafu there in terms of, you know, one thing I've noticed at the grocery store that never had a shortage was vegetables. I never had a shortage of vegetables. It was all the processed, crappy, unhealthy foods. That's what scares me about this more than anything. The things that make you more vulnerable to this virus are the things people are stocking up on. I haven't had any problem buying lettuce and cucumbers and tomatoes and all that stuff. But my fear is there won't be the labor to bring those harvests in later in the season. And might we have a shortage or a price spike at some point this year because of that?
Yeah, great question. First off, we just want government out of the way, but we are still following CDC guidelines. And,
right.
And agriculture, one of the first things the Trump administration did was list agriculture as critical infrastructure, meaning these folks need to go to work. They're great. They're heroes. Italian Knights, you know, you know, they're winning machines, you know, they need to get out there and put the crop in the ground, which is going on right now. You know, a lot of other businesses are shut down, hopefully just temporarily, but agriculture, we have to follow the seasons. And right. So we got a broad exemption in Kentucky and at the federal level to get our farmers out and working and put crops in the ground. and give some reassurance out there that, yes, we are open for business. And that includes our livestock markets.
Right.
However, we need to make sure that we follow those CDC guidelines, stay 6 feet apart from each other, and try to reduce the crowds when we can.
So you don't see a labor shortage at all due to this, right? Because,
well,
go ahead.
That's always an issue. Labor is always a top three issue. Even during a normal year, there's always been a lack of labor. And we depend upon legal migrant workers that have been vetted, that are utilizing our H-2A systems. We know I'm all about having a strong border. Mm-hmm. We need to know who's in our country and have it. It's a national security issue. But for those who are willing to come up, follow the rules, we depend on them. And one of the great things is that Secretary Sonny Perdue, Trump's top ag advisor, worked very, very quickly to make sure that even though our consulate is closed in Mexico, that returning workers can get back into the country and get on the farms. And to be honest with you, it's been a pretty smooth issue. But the long-term issue here at Leland is that agriculture, just like other industries, there are some processes where you cannot stand 6 feet away from each other. You literally have to be next to each other.
Right.
And we process over 1 million birds a day in Kentucky. Over 1 million birds are processed. And those assembly lines are designed for you to stand next to somebody. And so we're working with them right now to make sure they stay open. Because if a meat processing plant goes down, it will immediately ripple through our food supply system. So we're doing what we can. But hey, if Americans want to – if they're sitting at home and want to go work on a farm, I guarantee you
there's
somebody in your county that will give you the opportunity that your grandfather had working on a farm.
That's interesting. I grew up on actually an Indian reservation because my parents are missionaries, but my family, my generation, I'm Gen X, and my cousins worked on tobacco farms, you know? And so I am maybe of the last generation who's age group had friends, cousins, family that actually, you know, topped and hung tobacco in the state of Kentucky before it became almost a nothing thing in Kentucky. So, I can remember I'd come home to Kentucky in the summertime from Arizona where we lived, and my cousins, you know, we want to get together. Well, after we get done working on the farm, and they'd come in all tan, having, you know, worked out, you know, on the tobacco fields all day. My dad grew up working on it. Yeah.
They probably had some cash in their pocket, too.
They did.
And, but look, if you want to get back in touch with your roots, Leland, let me know. We're still growing tobacco among other crops.
Sweet.
And so just let me know. We won't even charge you for the experience.
Actually, I think that would be awesome. And speaking of tobacco, my understanding is that there is a company in Kentucky that may potentially have some therapeutic or vaccination-type drugs for this virus that is coming from, believe it or not, tobacco. Can you explain what that's going on?
Yes, I believe that agriculture technology could help us get out of COVID. Now, look, there's about 1,600 companies testing different medical treatments right now across the United States. I'm proud to announce that there's at least two agriculture companies from Kentucky currently testing their products on COVID patients. One is a pretty well-known company out of Owensboro, Kentucky, Bioprocessing. And if you remember back in 2014, there was a big Ebola outbreak in West Africa. They were the ones that developed the Ebola vaccine, which definitively saved people's lives by using Kentucky tobacco plants grown by Kentucky farmers as a medium to grow the enzymes and different medical components for that vaccine. They're doing the same thing right now with COVID. But again, along with all these other treatments, we just don't know. The second company is based out of Lexington, and due to proprietary issues, I can't really tell you everything they're doing, but they are using plants grown in Kentucky greenhouses to develop drugs that are being FDA trialed right now in New York. So who knows? I mean, let's pray on it, but agriculture very well could be a key to developing a medical treatment to get us out of this.
Yeah, and I would be awesome if some of that is actually centered right here in Kentucky. Speaking of right here in Kentucky, we got a lot of distilleries. there's been some word that the FDA is kind of hassling distilleries. And what was interesting was I talked to Josh Crawford this week from the Pegasus Institute, and the reason apparently the FDA is kind of bothering these distilleries is that they found for some reason that the hand sanitizer that distilleries have switched over to making actually tastes too good. Now, I don't know who the person in the FDA is whose job it is to drink the hand sanitizer and then pronounce this, you know, pronounce this ruling upon all of us. But it's like, come on, really? I mean, that we have all kind. Kids were eating Tide Pod. 21-year-old grown-ass adults were eating Tide Pod 6 months ago, and they didn't ban Tide. What is going on with that?
Look, we have seen so many companies and people completely stop what they're doing and try to give Americans what they need in really unprecedented ways since World War II. The distilleries, a lot of which overnight started using that alcohol, Kentucky proud corn-based mash by making alcohol, which for a lot of hand sanitizers is needed because it kills on contact, right? And unfortunately, the FDA has developed some guidelines that are somewhat murky about whether or not this hand sanitizer, which in some cases, Leland, is being donated. These companies are not asking for a single red penny. They just want to contribute to the cause. And unfortunately, there's some other hoops. Now, look, I have personally met with President Trump's FDA commissioner and deputy commissioners. These are great people. They come from the private sector. One comes from was head of food safety for Walmart. Amazing guy. The new commissioner, which just got on the job a few months ago. And oh, imagine having that job, just getting started. Yeah. And then, oh, by the way, global pandemic. Commissioner Hahn was like one of the head people of MD Anderson down in Texas. We have been communicating with them to try to solve this. But as you always know, there's always a lag in government. And there's one other issue on the hand sanitizer. Unfortunately, there's a tax issue.
Oh, my God.
That look, I understand it. I understand that when you're making a product that is highly regulated, a lot of times there's taxes involved,
right,
when it comes to alcohol. But this is alcohol that is never meant to be consumed. It's meant to be used to help kill germs and hopefully kill a disease. And hopefully, if Congress makes some more actions on COVID, we can stick some language in there that clarifies this.
And not only that, but most of this hand sanitizer being produced by distilleries is going to police officers, first responders, and in some distilleries there in Kentucky, some cases, to families who haven't been able to get it at frickin' Target or Walmart or wherever they've gone because of people hoarding this stuff, you know? So, you know, it's not as if and here's the other thing. I mentioned this when we were talking about these regulatory things going back. Do you honestly believe that, you know, Jim Beam Distillery is going to be like, when we get through this and we're on the other side of it, be like, hey, let's keep making hand sanitizer instead of whiskey, right? No, they're going to drop that like a red hot potato and go right back to what they do best, and that's making bourbon. You know, it's so asinine to think that they're going to even continue on making this thing.
Well, we're just trying to get this issue in front of the eyeballs of people who can make swift decisions. And
right.
So I hope we can fix this one. I have a tremendous faith in the new FDA commissioner, and so I think we've gotten this in front of his desk. But look, it's just another example of, folks, come on, let's do the right thing.
Well,
and you know, a lot of times there's regulations, rules that you have to work through. But folks, we're in a national emergency right now.
Well, and I mentioned last night, I tweeted this. I said CDC, NIH, Health and Human Services, FDA, FEMA, DHS, all bureaucracies that are supposedly focused on the same virus right now, and not one of them seem to be on the same page. How's that supposed to work? To your point, it's great that there's maybe a good new commissioner at the FDA. The president was, you know, thank God we had a president that had been deregulating for 3 years, right? And there were some regulations that were immediately dropped. But there's some things that are still out there that is just like, this is total common sense. Who's the person who we have to wait on for 6 months for them to go, oh, yeah, that works, let's do it. You know what I mean? It's like, come on. The title of the piece by the Pegasus Institute was, we're all deregulators now, because there's this movement across the country where people are going, these regulations are getting in the way of us fighting the coronavirus.
Yeah, great point. And look, you know, you can't steer the Titanic on a quick turn, but my goodness, if there was ever a time for us to just sit back and reevaluate the reason why some of these rules and regulations are there. It's right now.
Yeah.
And, you know, Trump, I know in agriculture, for every one new regulation, they've gotten rid of at least seven. I mean, they've had a really good track record on this. We need to unleash the ingenuity of American entrepreneurs and not penalize them.
Yeah.
And not penalize them, but throw up crazy rules. And look, the sooner we can do this, the sooner we can all go back to work.
Yeah.
There are other countries. There's Asian countries. Singapore has decided to open up their economy. And look, it comes at a cost, though. They're tracking you. They're tracking you so that if you do get positive, they can go back and figure out who you've been exposed to. So there are some serious liberty and privacy issues. But some other countries that are beyond the curve, that were about a month ahead of us, have decided to go back. And I'm trying to think about what the long-term effects of COVID are going to be in America, because at some point, we're going to have to go back to school.
Yeah.
At some point, our moms and pops need the permission to conduct business.
Yeah.
And that's a whole nother.
At some point, I need a freaking haircut, Ryan. At some point, I need a freaking haircut. I don't know if you saw my social media post the other day, as my wife was like, my wife's been bugging me because I always try to keep it high and tight. You know, I'm like, my dad taught me that. Always, you know, I've got a scruffy beard, but I keep it trimmed perfectly, and I keep my hair high and tight because my dad was always a no-nonsense, keep that hair short, son. And my wife's like, I want you to grow it out. I think it'll look good growing out. Now she's like, you look like a freaking hedgehog. It's like, well, I told you. I need a haircut.
I've always wanted to be a member of Creedence Clearwater Revival for Halloween. So I've already got a head start.
Can you get the mustache going? Can you get the mustache?
I'll do the whole thing. I'll be like a roadie for Pearl Jam.
That'd be so awesome. That'd be so awesome. I want that picture. But to your point, though, Sweden has done kind of the opposite of what everybody else has done. National Review has a story about it. They seem to be doing pretty well. And they've done almost none of those mandated social distancing. What they're doing, and this is what I think we need to shift to. I think every country probably has their own reason for why they would approach it a certain way. But I think this is what would make more sense for us. The two weeks that we've been in sort of lockdown, maybe three, makes sense to me. And I think it has worked. I think we have drastically lowered what the effects of this virus could be. But I think at this point now we need to start approaching it the way Sweden does, and that is, let's keep our most vulnerable population home, right? And let's figure out a way that we can make sure they get everything they need while they're at home. So we're talking people compromised immune systems, some pre-existing conditions, and elderly. And let's let the rest go back to work. And then let's all, 100% of us, wear a face mask. And I think if we did that and we had like ways for testing temperature daily for employees as they come in, and employers were testing actual tests once a week, and then they gave a plan that said, this is how I'll keep my customers 6 feet apart. I think once we do those things and once we have enough beds in our hospitals, we're good to go. We need to go back to work.
Yeah, I think at some point we're going to have to learn to either live with it or eradicate it. And hopefully we can get a vaccine sooner rather than later. And you got to stop and think about this. You know, a lot of people are comparing this to the Spanish flu, or there have been some analogies to HIV.
Right.
When both of those came online, first off, they did not have the medical expertise that we have today. You know, it took several years for them to even discover that HIV was a unique, novel virus.
Right.
We're so far ahead than they were 100 years ago, and so I have full faith with that. But I think that that we're experiencing the worst of the worst right now. And look, you're right, Leland. There's some areas of America that are getting pounded right now.
Right.
New Orleans, you know, Detroit, New York, and hopefully it stops there. But we've got some hurt and healing that we're going to have to go through.
Yeah.
But at some point, it's just like kind of post 9/11. There are some things that we're going to have to do differently for the rest of our lives.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
And one of them might be an emphasis on employee health. That hey, you know what? If you're feeling bad today, don't come in. And look, I've always grew up in a household. If you're able to get out of bed, your butt was working.
Yeah.
And you know what? Maybe we change that.
Right.
That's something that we just don't know yet.
Well, and I think you'll see a lot of companies shift in terms of how they do business toward, hey, you know what? It's okay if you want to work from home. You know,
yes.
I'm fortunate to work in the media, and technology allows me to broadcast anywhere in the country from my basement studio, which has made this situation super easy for me to continue making a living. but at the same time continue doing what I'm doing. My wife is able to work from home. I just think we're going to see a lot of corporate companies shift to that sort of dynamic model. And that could be a good thing. It's certainly people like the flexibility of it. And, you know, it's I think that could be a potential positive.
Let me tell you one of the most interesting statistics to come out so far. At Walmart, dress shirt sales have vastly outnumbered the sales of dress pants. You know why?
Yes.
Because people are sitting at the kitchen tables with a dress shirt on and then pajamas.
I kid you not. I kid you not. Yesterday, I kid you not. Big secret. Yesterday, I had a business meeting yesterday, and it was on GoToMeeting, right? And yeah. I'm sitting there with three other corporate guys, and there's four of us. We're all talking. I'm wearing a sport coat and a business butt down. I'm wearing freaking Nike gym shorts on the bottom. They had no idea. I love it. It was awesome.
Yeah, true statistic. That is definitely happening right now in America. But you know what? This has also exposed, once again, the need for high-speed internet in rural America.
Oh, my God, yeah.
We've got to have it.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's some kids at home that, unfortunately, despite their assignments, don't have a computer, have internet to get on. And, look, we can spend a whole nother podcast on that one and how to do it and who pays for it, et cetera. But, look, there are Eastern European countries that – that have better service than we do in some areas of rural Kentucky, and we need to get that fixed.
Yeah, I'm fortunate to have what they call a static IP address that is hardwired into my home because of the studio that I built, and that allows me, unless there's a major, you know, region-wide interruption to internet, I've got probably the best internet you can get. But that's expensive, and I have to make that investment in order for my business to run, you know. Most people don't have the amount of money it costs to have something like that every month. If they don't have a business, it doesn't make sense for them to have that, right? So you're right. We got to have better infrastructure so that people can have more dependable. You have a background in trade, and we touched on China a little bit earlier. I don't know. We were talking about Netflix also. Have you watched the series Pandemic on Netflix?
I have not. Okay. I'll add it to the list.
Add it to the list, and it's going to creep you out because it came out about, if I remember correctly, it was certainly starting to get promoted on my Netflix about 2 weeks before this COVID-19 thing went wrong. And it kind of, I am not a conspiracy theorist, but I got my wheels were spinning. I'm like, whoa, what did somebody know that we didn't know? But it's actually more about the flu, but we're living what they were warning about. And what's interesting about this is at one point, one of these doctors from one of these bureaucracies said, over the last 50 years, all major flu outbreaks have come from China. And they were specifically looking at these wet markets where they sell these animals that are exotic animals, monkeys and bats and all kinds of weird things.
Mm-hmm.
And they were like, we have got to get a handle on this because this is where viruses are coming into contact with human beings and they're mutating from the animals to a version that go to humans. And then it's spreading all over the world. And at some point, we're going to have another one that is going to be as damaging as the Spanish flu. It's terrifying when you go, wait a minute, these people had it right. What's interesting is one of the doctors and scientists that is now claiming that he thinks he has a cure for this is actually featured in this video, in this series, working on what he now thinks will actually solve this. But to that point, what is China's responsibility in this mess?
Their responsibility is to be transparent. And look, they are the second biggest economy. In some ways, we depend on each other. We need them for trade. We need them to move forward. But we need to be working on the same set of rules.
Yeah.
And that's one thing that when it comes to trade agreements that we finally, for the first time, have had realistic ways to enforce intellectual property, not stealing intellectual theft of what here in America you can get sued for overnight.
Yeah.
We need transparency out of the Chinese government. If they had just told us in the world about when this originally started, which we now know happened a lot earlier than what they're officially saying, we could have helped. We could have known. There's untold number of people that transferred into this country that were probably exposed and probably knew something was going on before they showed up on our soil. But we have to be transparent. And that's one thing about social media that here in America, when it comes to Twitter, Facebook, etc., It's not the same restrictions you see in Iran or China, right, where that stuff is shut down instantly by the government.
Right.
We, and look, I don't know if over the next year or 5 years, if there's any action, maybe there should be, but I think we're getting sick and tired of not having transparency. That's only one way.
Yeah.
And look, we like to be global leaders. We want to spread democracy, but we're talking about at this point, well over 10,000 Americans have died.
Right.
And if there was just one chance, one thing, that one piece of information we had known earlier to help prevent that or other deaths around the world, they owed it to the rest of, yeah, of the world to tell us.
Yeah, it seems like I'm seeing a lot of evidence now in news stories coming from reputable sources saying that this did in fact come from a lab in China, not that it was created by China as some sort of bioweapon, but rather that they appear to have been studying this virus in a lab in Wuhan, China, and the evidence is mounting that it was accidentally released from there. The problem is that with all communist states, and frankly governments in general, but especially with communist states, they make problems worse because they're afraid for the problem to exist in the first place. And so because of that lack of transparency with their own people and with people from around the world, you know, North Korea was just shooting victims, COVID tests, you know, and then they were able to go out and say, hey, we have no cases. Yeah, because you were shooting them in the head, you know. And so there's this attempt to cover up. And as always, the cover up is worse than the crime, because by covering up what was happening in China and not being honest with the world's not going to necessarily come down hard on you if you go, hey, we had somebody that was dealing with this in a lab. We were trying to find a cure and accidentally it got out. That happens. It can happen in America. It has happened in America. It can happen in any country in the world. But when you cover it up and don't tell people and continue to lie about it and then say, you know what, we might actually not sell you your medicines anymore, this is a bad actor on the world stage.
It's a bad actor. And look, obviously you have watched every pandemic infection movie on Netflix at this point. I'll catch up with you. And look, I mean, we don't know where it started. You know, maybe one day we will.
Yeah.
There's going to be books. And I mean, just think about how much research is going to be done on this during our generation. But I'll tell you this right now, a lot of those wet markets are still open in China.
Yeah. Yeah.
Still open today.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't understand.
And a lot of it's cultural. A lot of it's cultural. But look, if We've got to do a better job. We've got to do a better job. And like, I have full faith in our frontline medical workers. They're the heroes, our first responders who, you know, unfortunately, they're picking this up as well. And those in our food service industries as well. And I'm going to tell you, I spent a lot of time with some lunch ladies, excuse me, food service providers.
lunch and, lady. And, you know, I'm sorry. Little Adam Sandler.
That's you. That's you, not me. I work with these folks every week, and they deserve an attaboy, pat on the back, because they're providing meals for these kids. Sometimes they don't have it. And look, at some point, the world's going to have to pick itself back up and piece ourselves back together. And if there's an opportunity to improve things, what better time than now?
Well, and I'm glad we have an ag commissioner that has a level of knowledge that you have of the world around us and how that agriculture picture fits in. I mean, it sounds like right now is a good time to be a farmer. If you can navigate a few of the challenges, things might be pretty good for you, because the world needs food no matter what's going on.
That's right. And look, if you're listening at home, whether you're a farmer or not, if you have even just a small piece of land or even a balcony on your condo, consider growing something this summer.
Yeah.
You know, it's fun.
We are. We're going to grow tomatoes and cucumbers.
All right.
Yep.
Good deal. I planted my giant pumpkins earlier, so we're attempting a giant pumpkin.
Make his own pumpkin spiced latte for the office this fall.
Guess what? Did you see the Kentucky Derby? Obviously, was delayed till September.
Oh, I'm so happy. I know where you're going. Yeah. Go ahead.
Pumpkin spice mint juleps.
No, that's disgusting. Yes.
They're already marketing them. Yes.
That's
yes.
So disgusting. Like, I love my state. I love my state. And a mint julep at the Derby is like, okay, when I go to the Derby, a mint julep and a cigar are must-haves. Doesn't mean I like them every day of the week. There's nothing I hate worse than pumpkin spice. I cannot imagine the holy hell that is going to be unleashed when they have a pumpkin spice.
No, it's happening. It's happening.
Oh, my God. God, I love it. Hey, listen.
But you know what? We need to have, and when we're able to crawl our way out of this, we need to have a return to normalcy. And it's things like the Kentucky Derby.
Yes.
It's things like professional sports, college football. At some point, we need that back so we can have a sense of hope and something to look forward to.
Even if we all have to wear masks at Churchill Downs, we need a return to that hope. I hope that, you know, I want to commend our governor. He has, I think, with a great heart and a heavy heart, he has an enormous amount of burden on his shoulders. He is trying to save lives. But I have urged him through just about every interview I've done with state officials and legislators on this program, please, please, please start thinking about how we reopen the economy. What is the best benchmark for when, and just giving people hope by saying, here are these benchmarks. When we reach these benchmarks, you can go back to work. Other states are doing it. Democrat governors are doing it. Even in the hardest hit state in the country right now, New York's Governor Cuomo is talking about it. Colorado's governor yesterday at his press conference told the people of Colorado, hey, guess what? We're fighting this, but prepare to, figure out, plan how you're going to reemerge into the economy. We've got to start thinking about that in Kentucky.
Yes.
We need to continue saving lives, but we have to start thinking about the future.
You're exactly right. And in agriculture, we already have a plan. We've been working on it. And obviously, we want to focus on the healthcare issues first right now. But it doesn't mean you can't do two things at once.
Yeah.
And so we already have a plan ready to go.
Yeah. And I know that thank you. I know you're busy today, and I kept you way longer than I said I would. And I apologize because I know the next thing on your agenda today is to rewatch episode one of The Tiger King. And I have kept you from that for 20 minutes longer than I said I would. So I'm going to let you go. We'll watch that.
What do you think I've been doing for the last 20 minutes, Leland?
I've been
dress shirt and pajamas watching Tiger King and growing my hair out.
I love it. Agriculture Commissioner Ryan Quarles, thank you, buddy. I appreciate you coming on today.
Say yes.
All right.
Be
God,
safe.
God bless. All right. That is awesome. What a great guy. And, you know, he's in there and he's churning away at it and he's trying to figure out plans. And, you know, I again want to implore the governor to start thinking. I mean, Democrat governors of liberal states are thinking about the economy in the next couple of weeks. As I said, Colorado's governor, Jared Polis, liberal guy, got on his press conference and said to his state, he said, people need to start planning. How are you going to come back out into the economy? Governor Cuomo even starting to talk about this. Where is Governor Beshear on making these advancements? All he has to do to give people hope, to give them a light at the end of the tunnel, is appoint a panel of people that will look at the economy in ways that we can set benchmarks and say, look, in 2 weeks, if we're at this place and we do these things, we can open up these businesses. And then 2 weeks after that, if we're in this place and we do these things, we can open up. And then if you have to move those datelines, fine. But at least give people the hope and something for us to work together towards. This isn't all Andy Beshear saving lives. This burden doesn't all have to be on him. In that pandemic documentary, one of the things I thought was interesting was a guy in India was talking about the bird flu outbreak there some years ago. And he said, you know, government can't handle this on its own. The public can't handle this on its own. Science can't handle this on its own. The only way we can defeat this is for the three to work together, the government, the public, and science. And that's what has to happen here. And you've got to include us. You can't just tell us stay at home. The governor the other day said, oh, Easter gatherings, even small ones with family only, are not permitted. Really? You know, you have to trust law-abiding citizens to do the best they can to protect other law-abiding citizens and cooperate. And if you don't give people hope, they will not cooperate. And hope is the key. And hope can be given by setting benchmarks and say, if we need to work together towards this, I need you to stay home for these 2 weeks, and then we can do this. We need to do this, and then we can do this. That's all I'm asking for here. It's not that difficult. So anyway, all right. What else did I have for this episode? I've got some great guests coming up. Eric Erickson, he once was the CEO of Red State, a very popular conservative blog. He's been a CNN contributor. He's now a radio talk show host, and he's going to come on with us. He was falsely accused of being a member of the KKK by the mainstream media. Wait till you hear this story. He's going to join us. Drew Curtis, we're going to talk about economic shifts coming up in the new economy because it is going to be different. We're never going to go back to the normal we had before. So we'll talk about that. Loretta Powers, legal expert, is going to join us. Here's an interesting thing. Who do hospitals protect and who do they save? when they become overrun by this stuff. There's actually a legal liability side of it that could be dictating who lives and dies. All of that is coming up this week on the Disruption Zone. The best thing you can do for me is share this podcast. We are getting thousands of downloads weekly. I never thought it would be this strong and powerful, but it's because of you that we are spreading and expanding our voice. So you can subscribe for free at Apple Podcasts, at Google Play, at iHeartRadio's app. Just search The Disruption Zone, bam, and you can have me delivered straight to your phone. You can carry me around in your pocket. And the more people who subscribe for free, the bigger our voice becomes. Thanks to my co-executive producer and co-host Cameron Mills. Thanks to Dynamics Productions and Dynamics Audio for their help and support of this radio program. They provide the music for this program, so we appreciate them. And you can follow us on Twitter. It's at Leland Show and at Zone Disruption. And on Instagram, at Great Lelando and at The Disruption Zone. Thanks for listening. I'm Leland Conway, The Disruption Zone.